I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Yards After College podcast, powered by KSLSports.com. I'm Kyle Ireland, and alongside me every week, it's the one and only, I don't know if you're number one, because I really enjoy it as well, but you're up there with the Mountain Dew fans of the world, Sam. Sam Farnsworth of KSL Sports Live on KSL 5 TV. Sam, I've got this new Mountain Dew, this Fruit Quake. It's a fruitcake. flavored Mountain Dew. Are you interested in trying this at all?
No, I'm not. Look, here's the thing. I think of all sodas out there, Mountain Dew has really kind of taken liberties with, you know, they've maybe gone to the next level of extremes, I guess, with flavors that they try. Look, I love Mountain Dew. I'm a big Diet Mountain Dew fan. And when they come out with a new flavor, generally speaking, I'll give it a shot. In fact, when we went down to cover the NFL draft, I bought that Flamin' Hot Mountain Dew, and I made you try it too, right? And it was better than I expected. But I just think they've taken it too far sometimes, and that's just the latest right there. The fruitcake mountain. I mean, will I give it a taste? Probably, but I don't believe I'll be adding that to my list of favorites.
Yeah, it's definitely not a favorite. I think after the 12-pack, I'm going to be done. Last year, they had the gingerbread cookie one or whatever it was. I thought that one was much better than this one. I really liked that gingerbread one. I know it sounds gross, but it was pretty good.
I tasted it, didn't like it.
I also was not like, I don't know, the last 2 years, the voodoo Halloween one with the mystery flavor have not been a fan of that. They need to rethink the mystery flavors. But
look, anyway, they've already got some amazing things. There's two things they should do before they get on board with all these new flavors. Let's first get a Livewire Zero. What's taking?
Oh, let's get everything Zero. Can we just start everything on the Zero level
and a Code Red Zero? Right. Get those two. Get those two, and then, agreed. Hey, I'll be good.
So, hey, and I don't know if you've seen this. I don't know how new it is, but I tried one for the first time a couple weeks ago. They had, like, they have the Energy, the Mountain Dew Amp, and then they've got, like, the Kickstarts or whatever, the Rise and all those ones. They had a Code Red, like, Energy one. It tasted exactly like Code Red, but I don't know if it's supposed to just give me a little more kick in the morning, but it was good.
Not sure.
No zero.
All right.
Well, Sam, we should talk about the NFL, even though I could talk about Mountain Dew with you for an hour. That would be fun. We had a pretty wild week. Like we were talking at the end of last week's podcast about the bye weeks and how there was like, I don't know, like six teams on a bye or something last week. So I was kind of going into Sunday thinking, you know, it's going to be a little bit slower of a week as far as me like putting up these stories during the games on Sunday. And I was busy like all day on Sunday. It was pretty crazy. The afternoon games, we only had two of them, I think. But like Bobby Wagner had that crazy jump over the offensive line and block the field goal. I mean, like it was a pretty fun week, don't you think?
Yeah, you know, and when you get to this time of year, especially when we're looking at it from a local standpoint, with how many buys you start getting into, you know, all the bye weeks, they tend to slow it down. We talk about it here at KSL Sports on the TV side of things all the time, each Sunday as Jeremiah is putting together his local segment, how sometimes, we have to look for a guy who maybe just got one tackle this week because there's just a lot of extra guys getting rest and on buys and stuff that happens. But there's still always something that pops out on the screen. They're like, holy cow, that was amazing. Like you mentioned, you know, Bobby Wagner. I mean, Zach Wilson beating the Bills. Now, I know it's not a one-player game, the NFL of all sports out there, the NFL really requires every position to be right at the top if you want to be a top contending team in the league. Well, Zach still played amazing. You look. I'll steer this to Zach a little bit since I'm already talking about him. His stat line: 18 completions, 155. What was it, 160 yards? Whatever it was. I'll have to look it up right here. Here it is: 18 for 25, 154, a touchdown. I mean, you look at that, and you're like, right? Yeah. But they beat the Bills, and the one stat I will say, look at this to really get a good idea of how well Zach Wilson played. And I know quarterback rating is hard to understand for a lot of people out there, but a rating of 101.1 is a very good quarterback rating for a single game. And that was his rating against the Buffalo Bills. And the Bills have had a decent to better than decent defense for most of the year. And Zach Wilson came up when he had to and helped lead the team to scores when they needed to. And, of course, that Jets defense has been so good that they didn't need a whole lot to be able to hold off the Bills. But you know what? We've said it before on this podcast, but credit due to Zach Wilson for being a big piece of what they've been doing to become the AFC East leaders. When's the last time the Jets led the AFC East?
Yeah. I mean, at least, 12 years ago or something like that. It's been a decade. Wow. So pretty crazy. I mean, we talked about it last week. I wrote that story on KSLSports.com, kind of just talking about how he needed to step it up in the second half of the year. And it really seemed like all of that pressure from the last, 14 days or so really built up on him, and he answered the call. I mean, like you said, the numbers weren't spectacular. And I know you don't battle against the opposing quarterback, but like going into that matchup, you saw Josh Allen and Zach Wilson talking pregame, laughing on the field together. And, that was a marquee matchup for Sunday. And Zach Wilson came out on top. Like, I mean, he played well enough to win. The fumble is the thing that was, he probably had like two or three mistakes where I was like, he shouldn't have thrown that ball. And you expect that, right. Every quarter. I mean, Aaron Rodgers threw three picks in the red zone last week, right? Like, I mean, Aaron Rodgers did that.
Right.
And he hasn't had a great year anyway. But, I mean, you expect a couple of issues or, hiccups there. But that fumble, I mean, like, Zach's got to just, like, protect the football there. Like, he needs to, like, emphasize that in practice, or I don't know what he needs to do, but like protecting the ball at all costs needs to be in the forefront of his mind.
Look, and I know that, that's critical, especially as a quarterback, protecting that football, not throwing interceptions, not fumbling. Now you can control most of it, not all of it. Some of the turnovers aren't always.
Sure.
And I'll go back a little bit to what you said about also, it's not really quarterback versus quarterback. When I covered the Broncos, Peyton Manning would say that right away whenever you brought up, you're going against Tom Brady this week or whatever. He's like, well, I'm not going against him. I'm going against the Patriots defense. Or, he was one of the first guys to always point that out. But I guarantee you, every quarterback, when they go into a game, especially against another high-profile guy, as Zach was going against Josh Allen, guarantee you, even though he's not going against him, he is in his mind. He wants to have a better game than Josh Allen. He wants to go out there and perform better, be the better guy, be the best guy on the football field. I guarantee you that fueled some of what Zach Wilson did on Sunday. Again, yes, he did make a few mistakes. Yes, he needs to protect the football. I mean, it's critical that you protect the football. But and it's unfortunate that, especially in New York, there's not as much patience for a quarterback to develop as there are other positions. You go back and look at another local who's having a great NFL career in Garrett Bowles and how he struggled the first 3 years of his career, league leader in penalties. And it was almost looking like, man, this was a bust. And then suddenly, boom, it clicked. And he's a Pro Bowl left tackle, one of the best in the game. Too bad he's got that injury this year, because I feel like he's just been moving forward from – if we have the same patience with quarterbacks, which they used to
right
in the 80s, right? If you have that same patience with a Zach Wilson, I am a real believer that all of this will play forward into him having a successful NFL career, and it could work out with the New York Jets. They just got to be patient as a team. It sounds like Robert Saleh is being patient, but can the media be patient as well?
I don't know.
So we'll see. But I like the steps he's taking. He's not taking giant leaps, but he is taking steps every week.
Sam, so I mentioned that Bobby Wagner play. I want to get a couple of thoughts from you before we hit on your three stars of the week, as we do every week on the podcast. But So we talked about Zach Wilson, a couple other highlights from the local guys. Yeah, Jamal Williams, he ended up getting a 2-point conversion. Didn't get a touchdown, but still up there with the ranks of touchdown leaders in the NFL this season. Devin Lloyd with a crazy, they ruled it an interception initially, which kind of like as I was writing it, I was like, this is weird. It's not an interception, but that's what the stat said on the box score. So I'm like going with it. And then like I put my story out there, and then like 20 minutes later, they change it to a fumble recovery. I was like, okay, thank you. So then I have to change my story all around. It's annoying. But seals the win for the Jaguars there. Bobby Wagner, like I said, has that crazy blocked field goal and recovery on the play. And then Dax Millen, former BYU wideout, gets his first touchdown as an NFL player in his second season with the Commanders. What are your thoughts on maybe a couple of those locals that stood out this week?
Well, I really like Jamal Williams and the way he's been playing this year. And yes, it's very much every week. It seems like, boom, it's Jamal. And then he's really quiet, right? But you did mention he got in on a 2-point conversion. He still had 24 carries. It is clear now that he's the bell cow, you know, even with DeAndre Swift back. And I don't know if DeAndre Swift is 100% or whatever, but DeAndre Swift had 2 carries in the game. Jamal Williams is the guy in Detroit, and he's stepping up. He's rising to the occasion. Even if it's 24 carries, he still went for 81 yards. It's 3.5 yards a carry. That's just fine in the NFL.
I wish it was a little more. Wish it was like 4.3 or something, you know? Right. Because then you're like, oh, if we run him like 3 times, we're getting a first down, you know? Like, that's my only thing with the yards per carry. I'm like, it's just got to be above like 3.5, 4, you know? Like, then it becomes like where you're like unstoppable pretty much.
Yeah. And for me, yards per carry is like the first thing you want to look at with the running back, especially when they have a larger sample size, when they have the carries with them, because like you said, I think 4 is the magic number, right? Because then you think of it this way, 3 carries and you got a first down. 3.5 yards. That's why I'm like, okay, 3.5 yards is fine still. Cause
we're more about the yak on this podcast, you know, just going to throw that out there.
100%. Right. But I mean, his 4.3 yards per carry so far this season, that's at his career high. And so I like, you know, again, love where he's at. The 8 touchdowns, that's a story that we've talked about a lot. That's just awesome. I mean, he's having a season that could have him getting his first Pro Bowl nod, depending on how things go by the end of the year. So Jamal Williams has been one of my favorite locals to watch this season so far. And I, you know, hey, if he didn't get in the end zone last week, it kind of feels like this week he'll be back in for probably 2, right?
Seriously. No, he's killing it this year. I will say, like, I've seen this graphic going around social media this last week where some BYU fan picked up, you know, all these offensive touchdowns and stuff from these former BYU players and then said that there were 0 from the former Utah guys. Right, you got like Jamal Williams, Dax Mill, and Tyler Algier, like Zach Wilson, Taysom Hill. You've got a whole list of them. They're all offensive guys. Like all the BYU guys on defense haven't really done a ton this year. Sione Takitaki had a moment a couple weeks ago, but I mean, it's pretty limited. And then they're like, oh, look, no Utah guys have any touchdowns. Yeah, because they're all defensive guys. Like they're deep. I mean, Devin Lloyd. We can talk about Nephi Sewell here in a minute, coming up on the Saints roster, Chase Hansen. Like, I mean, they've had amazing standout guys, but like, it's because their defense has been amazing at Utah for 15 years, right? Like that's such a, I don't know. Sorry. Like I just had to bring that up because I saw it floating around. I'm like, okay, like you watch Devin Lloyd play. Like, I mean, when was the last time that BYU had a first round defensive guy picked, you know, like, I mean, forever, right?
Yeah. You know, and look, you said it, Kyle. Utah's identity for the past decade plus, and maybe even beyond, has been great defense and then a good running game for the most part, you know? And so
ball control.
Yeah. So you mentioned it, you know, Devin Lloyd, you've got Jalen Johnson doing his thing in the NFL. I mean, just think of all the names, whether they're doing big things or not. You know, Julian Blackman's out there as well. You know, As you mentioned, Nephi is coming up. He's getting his opportunity. So there's, I'm gonna steer it to the other side for a little bit on offense. Yeah, Zach Moss. Maybe things haven't turned out. Maybe they will start to turn out with Indianapolis. We'll still wait and see there. But think of a guy like Tim
Hey,
Patrick.
we'll talk about Indianapolis in a little bit, and I don't know how things are steering there, Sam. Just
Think of
saying.
a guy. Think of a guy like Tim Patrick, though. Right?
Yeah.
He was a very, very kind of just average college football wide receiver, above average college football wide receiver. Statistically, wasn't anything fantastic, but his hard work, his athleticism, earned him an opportunity in the NFL, and he has been fantastic. Unfortunately, injuries gotten in the way for him this year, but there still are offensive players to be excited about from the U. But you're right; it's just the DNA of Utah and BYU in the NFL is more offensive players for BYU and defensive players for Utah. Yeah. So yeah, it's
I just had to call it out because I saw it and I was okay,
it's
such a skewed
out.
Graphic. Like,
right.
BYU fans are eating it up, but I'm like, okay, like you got to take a step back here and like understand the perspective.
Right.
I mean, nobody in the NFL quarterback wise is throwing the ball to Jalen Johnson's way. Like they're just not throwing the ball to whoever he's guarding. Like that says a ton about Jalen Johnson. Like
all the way.
He's unbelievable. He's one of the best corners in the NFL. I don't know. I wish that he had more picks and more interceptions and fumble recoveries and all that stuff because it'd be more fun to write about. But I mean, it's also like Jalen Johnson is amazing. Yeah. So anyway, just throwing that out there.
Yep.
Well, Sam, it's interesting. Every week I wait to hear who your three stars of the week are because sometimes, like, I'm like, okay, like, you know, Jamal has two touchdowns. Okay, Jamal's going to be one of the stars this week. Like, it just can, you know, I can put that down in Sharpie. I don't have to write that in pencil and just figure it out. This week, you know, I'm fascinated to see where you go. Should we start with your third star here?
Yeah, let's do it. I was hoping for some points on the board from this guy, but it was still a very nice week for him. So here's my third star.
Third star.
Tyler Allgeier in the backfield. Patterson to the sideline. Here is Allgeier across midfield. Another Atlanta first down still going. Tyler Allgeier is finally brought down at the Chargers 15-yard line. He gains 44. Spins out of trouble.
Uh-oh.
And now dumps it off. And it's another first down and much more for Allgeier. And Allgeier gains 24.
Okay, so on Sunday, Tyler Allgeier, career high 99 yards on just 10 carries. He also had a reception for 24 yards. So there you go, 123 total yards. Didn't get in the end zone. It is what it is. I'm still waiting for him. I know he's got a touchdown rushing and a touchdown receiving, but I'm kind of waiting for him to have that game where the two come together. He's got a big yardage performance and gets into the end zone. They put up a stat on Thursday Night Football showing how many 350 plus yard rushers they've got this season, including Marcus Mariota, and they've got four of them. And so they are running the ball a lot in Atlanta. Allgeier's the leading back when it comes to yardage, but because they're spreading it out so much, it's going to limit opportunities as well. So he made the most of his opportunities again. He's gaining the trust of his coaches, went 99 yards on Sunday on 10 carries. So he gets my third star, not for what happened on Thursday, which wasn't necessarily his fault, Kyle, but I mean, it's kind of wild. Three receptions for negative 17 yards on Thursday Night Football.
Yeah, only six players. This is from NFL and CBS pulled this stat out. Only six other players dating back to 1950 had that in a game. It's crazy. I mean, but if you watch that game, I mean,
yeah,
it was one. It was just a terrible football game. I thought, like,
yes.
It was 25-15, but it was not an exciting football game to watch on Thursday night. It was just raining like crazy there in Charlotte, and the Panthers came in with two wins, so you're not expecting anything from them. They've had a quarterback carousel all season. So I'm like, oh, the Falcons, you know, like they're probably going to win the game. They're going to run the ball with like Allgeier and Cordero Patterson came back off of IR. I was like, okay, like they're gonna just keep the ball on the ground. Like, it was unbelievable, Sam. Like, that was such a bad football game. And those plays where Tyler was catching the ball in the backfield, like Mariota was dumping it off to him, and there were like there was a DB and a linebacker on him immediately. Yeah. Like, he had no chance whatsoever. I was like, I mean, that stat is like, it's crazy, but it's also misleading because it's not on Tyler. Like, it's really on the offensive line and on Mariota, 100%. Nowhere else to go with the ball.
100% on blocking, because Mariota was being just overwhelmed and was just trying to save his own life by dumping it off to his relief, you know, valve there. And that was Tyler Allgeier. But the thing was, because of the poor Atlanta blocking in that game, By the time Mariota was even lucky enough to get the ball out with three guys on top of him, by the time Allgeier caught the ball, there was already one, two guys right on top of him too. So
exactly.
He had a catch for -5, a catch for -6, and another catch for -6. But it was just because as soon as he had the ball, he was just there. He had zero chance. So wild stat. I think it's worth pointing out because of the history that you mentioned. Three catches for -17 yards, but it if you're just looking at the box score, it's very you had to see the game to understand why. But Tyler Allgeier, I love the trajectory he's on in his rookie season.
All right, Sam, number two, who's your second star of the week?
Second star.
Washington touchdown, Dax Milne.
Now this is just absolutely perfect. You want to talk about just a whip route, get right back to the outside, sell that over, sell that shallow cross, bam, stick your foot in the ground, get out, and find the pylon. You can't do it any better than that.
That's the first career touchdown for the second-year player drafted out of BYU in the seventh round. What a moment for Dax Milne.
All right, there it is. Dax Milne. This is why I decided to refrain from commenting on him a little bit earlier, because I want to save it for now. But I'm going to give him props here. My number two star, because he finally gets into the end zone in his NFL career on a reception. It was a short pass play, but, I mean, the guy's got hands. You know, it wasn't necessarily the easiest catch, but it was a good catch, and he still got into the end zone, got into the corner where the pylon was for the touchdown. So I want to give him credit, because I think as the season began, seeing him return, playing his role in the return game, I was like, man, this is a really good fit for him. I think he's going to house one before Britt Covey houses one in the NFL. I'm not sure if I still stand in that area, but I don't know. I still like him in the return game. I wish he would get – it's almost like clockwork. One target a game is about it for Dax Milne. But for this target –
it all seems like it comes in the second half too. Like, he's utilized later in the game. I don't know if it's because, like, Washington has typically, like, struggled towards the end of games, right? They're losing a lot. And so it's like maybe they're just kind of rotating backups in. I also wanted to get your perspective on this too. Do you think that – he'll be utilized more with Taylor Heinicke at quarterback as opposed to Carson Wentz? Because it seemed to me like Taylor Heinicke does a better job at spreading the ball around. Like, to me, he's not the – I don't know. I watched Carson Wentz every week last year with the Colts because I'm a Colts fan. And it's like – I mean, you're just scared every time he throws the football, right? Like, it's boom or bust kind of a play with him, where Heinicke just – he's not going to explode and wow you, but – I feel like he does. I mean, he's a great game manager, right? Like, he's not going to be this wow player, but I mean, Dax could be like a check down guy for him, you know, and run those like just 5 yard outs and those kinds of like simple routes where, you know, Terry McLaurin could be the deep threat. But Dax, I feel like, has more opportunity with Taylor Heinicke. I don't know.
I tend to agree with that. And, you know, maybe this is a little bit of a stretch. It's only Dax's second year in the NFL, but there is familiarity with Heinicke where there wasn't with Wentz. You know, Wentz being the new quarterback coming up, right?
That's a good point.
Heinicke was there with Milne last year. They were probably working a lot of similar reps together. I know Heinicke started a bunch too, but you know, when you're, especially this year, when you're working second team reps or whatever, there's probably a lot of Heinicke and Milne working the same reps this year in practice. And so there's that, a little more of that familiarity, maybe a little more of that trust, a little better timing, which is big time for quarterbacks and receivers. So I would like to think that that is the case, that that could be a reason why Milne might start getting targeted more. I would like to hope that that's the case as well. I want to see Dax Milne get more opportunities because he was a really fun wide receiver to watch with Zach Wilson at BYU. I want to see that same fun receiver in the NFL. We just haven't had that opportunity yet.
All right, Sam, let's see it. Who's your nut? Or I guess hear it. I mean,
do you have any?
The podcast, right?
Do you have any?
For your number one?
Yeah.
Oh, Sam, you had to put me on the spot here. I am going to say you're going to go with Bobby Wagner.
First star. Let's go.
Yards it is. Oh, and it's blocked. The Rams smother it up at the 40.
What a job.
Bobby Wagner.
By Bobby Wagner, who's brought so much leadership. And so he takes full advantage. And as soon as the center goes down, he times it and gets up.
Only the second miss of any kind, point after or field goal. Wagner, the veteran in his 11th year.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Oh my goodness, Kyle, how did you know? Bobby Wagner is my first star of the week. I don't think he's gotten a star. Maybe he did early in the season. I don't know if it was my first star or not. I can't remember. I'll have to dig through my archives. But Bobby Wagner, man, that blocked field goal, that's all it took. First of all, let's forget the blocked field goal and just his season in general. Bobby Wagner, for being in, what is he? He's in his 13th, 12th year or something. He is still playing at a very high level, still one of the best, if not the best linebacker, middle linebacker in the NFL. The guy is amazing. And then to do what he did to block that kick on Sunday was just incredible. First of all, you cannot touch a lineman if you're jumping over the line. Even if your toe just scratches the guy, that's a penalty. You can't touch anyone. You can't push off of anyone to get over the line. You can't do that. Now, if you can jump over the line on your own without touching anyone, fair game. And oh my goodness, for a guy that's been around the league that long to show that kind of athleticism, that kind of hop, that vertical jump to leap over the center. He did have help from his defensive guy to keep holding the snapper down, right? But to still get over, and then the left-handed rejection of that kick, that was an outstanding play. As soon as I saw it, I'm like, my goodness, that's the play of the week. That's got to be my top star.
Like you said, hey, just want to point this out. You're aging Bobby a little bit. This is only year 11 for him. So
11.
He's still got a couple more years in his prime. He's still there. But no, that block was just crazy. I don't know, Sam. You mentioned the rules there kind of protecting those type of plays unless they clear that line. So that's why you see most of the time they put those speedsters out on the edge, and if they can get around – that's where you see most of those blocks. When was the last time we saw one of these kind of jump over the line, get the block that way? I mean, it seems like they are very rare. And I honestly can't remember the last time that I I saw one in the NFL, which made it such a crazy play.
It's been a while. I'm trying to think in my mind, because I know I've seen it, but it's been long enough and few enough that I can't pinpoint it. And I know I've seen where they've thrown the flags too, on blocks like that for the reasons that we pointed out already. So,
yeah. It's really where you have to, like, it has to be perfect timing. You know, the jump's perfect. There's not an opportunity there where, you know, because, I mean, split second and all of a sudden that's a penalty, right? So, like,
right.
It was, you know, everything kind of lined up perfectly there for Bobby.
Yeah, so he had that amazing play. Not only that, got to shout him out for what he did on the defensive side. He led his team with 13 tackles in the game, had a tackle for loss, you know, 8 of those 13 solo tackles. Like I said, he is still a Pro Bowl linebacker. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame someday, and he's only just padding that resume with every game that he plays. Bobby Wagner, the former Utah State Aggie, still an elite NFL linebacker.
All right, Sam, just a couple more things with the local guys before I want to talk to you about the number one story in the NFL as a whole this week. But earlier in the week, the Rams, we were just talking about with Bobby Wagner, but they also waived former Utah defensive back Terrell Burgess. Burgess actually was picked up by the Giants. New York signed him to their practice squad, so he's landed quickly with another team. And then former Utah linebacker Nephi Sewell, he went undrafted in April and was quickly signed to the New Orleans Saints practice squad. And he's been on the Saints practice squad since the season began. And they just signed him to the active roster. So he's going to be on the 53-man for week 10. It's crazy, man. We're in week 10 already. But congrats to Nephi Sewell. He's joining former Utah linebacker, safety mix, whatever there, Chase Hansen, who's also with the Saints on their 53 man. So pretty cool moment for Nephi to be on the active roster there. And then just last thing, I put up a story here on KSLSports.com. Former Utah quarterback and coach Brian Johnson. Everybody remembers him for their 2008 undefeated season and Sugar Bowl victory over Alabama, but he's kind of had this meteoric rise through the coaching ranks. Yeah, he was obviously at Utah, Mississippi State, Florida, and now he's in the NFL with the Philadelphia Eagles. And it seems like it's really just been the last 3 or 4 weeks, Sam, but he's kind of been talked about as this like sleeping giant as far as coaching circles are concerned. And he was on Adam Schefter's podcast, obviously the NFL insider there for ESPN. And he kind of discussed his coaching career. He credits Kyle Whittingham for giving him his start in coaching because he didn't know what he wanted to do when he got done with school there up on the hill in Salt Lake City. But kind of an interesting story. I put up a story, like I said, at KSLSports.com. So I recommend everybody go checking that out, especially Utah fans listening to this. But what do you think about Brian Johnson? You know, he's only been with the Eagles here for a short amount of time, and you know, obviously they're undefeated right now. Jalen Hurts has clearly taken a step this season with the Eagles and playing some pretty good football. I was looking at his stats because I wrote a story about Brian Johnson a couple weeks ago, and I kind of put in what Jalen Hurts had done this season. And he had, you know, had like 1,500 yards or something passing, 6 touchdowns and only 2 interceptions. And then I kind of looked just to see where he was after week 9. And still only 2 interceptions, but he had doubled his touchdowns. He's already up to 12 interceptions there just in a couple of weeks, or 12 touchdowns in a couple of weeks. And then he's like 2,200 yards passing or something like that, 2,100 yards passing. So, I mean, Johnson's clearly coaching Hurts up in a nice way, and Hurts is making the plays on the field. But pretty exciting stuff there to hear Johnson being talked about as the potential head coach this soon.
Yeah, well, so when you're a position coach, you look at that position group and how well they're doing. And that says a lot about what you're doing as a head coach or as a position coach, obviously, and how good of a coach you are. Then the doors of opportunity begin to open. So the, I guess, natural next step would be for an offensive coordinator position to open up for Brian Johnson to really, you know, as a quarterback's coach for Jalen, like you nailed it, right? I mean, Jalen Hurts is having an MVP type season. People are talking about Jalen Hurts as the MVP. The Eagles are undefeated. Brian Johnson's a big part of what's happening there and that success. The opportunities are going to come, and they're going to come pretty quick for Brian Johnson. Don't be shocked if already this offseason he gets interviewed for some head coaching vacancies out there, even though I don't know that that would be his next step. You know, the NFL and their Rooney rules, which, you know, that we could spend another podcast on that too. I don't think they're doing that quite right either, but it means that there will be opportunities to interview. And just that alone though is huge, because it gets his name and personality out there. More people become familiar with who Brian Johnson is as a person and as a coach. And that only has the opportunity to boost his reputation in the NFL of who he is and what he can do. He's already got a lot of great coaches behind him that are probably backing him up. You know, Nick Saban, one of them, from when he spent time with him. Obviously, Coach Witt's going to back him up, all the way down to former, Alex Smith. We were talking about this before the podcast. Alex Smith is good friends with him. Alex Smith will back him up too, you know. So he's already got this good network.
Yeah,
there will be opportunities for Brian Johnson, and I can't wait to see where it goes from here.
Yeah, I'm really fascinated by it, because I wouldn't have thought, just looking, you know, at his, you know, short amount of time in the NFL, but it would be really fun to have him kind of be in those talks when we hit that first Monday after the regular season in January, and seeing his name pop up. I'm looking forward to it. But you mentioned, you know, that Rooney rule and coaching. It's been a big topic in the NFL this week. And it's because of my Indianapolis Colts, who are just really bad at football this year. It's amazing they have 3 wins and a tie, because Sam, they could very easily be 0-8 and or 0-9, that is, sorry. And my gosh, they're really bad. And they fired Frank Reich a week after they let go of their offensive coordinator, which was a week after they benched Matt Ryan for Sam Ehlinger. And my goodness, Sam, Jeff Saturday gets brought in as the interim head coach. He's never coached at any level other than high school. And his high school team was like 20-16 and won 1 playoff game. So it's not like he was even blowing away the high school game. And it seems like, you know, he's got a really good relationship with Jim Irsay. And I don't know if he got an endorsement from Peyton Manning. I don't know if that happened at all. But, you know, the Rooney rule doesn't impact the interim status of the coach.
Right.
It's only the full-time gig. So the Colts will have to comply with that rule after the season's over. Whether that involves Saturday end up getting the full-time gig or not, the Colts, that is, will have to interview a minority candidate for the job. And just on the spirit of that rule, that's where that's kind of violated in this, to me, because obviously they're going to have to comply with it. You have to, as an NFL franchise. But it's just the whole premise of that rule. I mean, it's been around for like 2 decades, and it seems like we're still having these conversations every year. And, you know, even with all of the, you know, talk of racial injustice and things throughout the country the last couple of years, Sam, it frustrates me that we're still at this point with the NFL as well. Like, Eric Bieniemy, for instance, like, that's one guy that I look at with the Chiefs, their offensive coordinator, who's interviewed for head coaching positions the last few seasons. But it's like I saw they fired Frank Reich, and I was like, okay, I want the Saints, or the, I don't know why I keep saying the Saints. They're not my team. The Colts should go out and hire him. Like, I mean, Chris Ballard, who was the GM for the Colts, he has ties to Kansas City. He kind of helped draft Patrick Mahomes when he was there. And I'm like, okay, like, he's going to talk to some people in Kansas City. We're going to get Bieniemy here in Indianapolis. Like, I was getting all hyped for it. And then like an hour later, they're like, Jeff Saturday's coming as the interim head coach. I was like, you got to be kidding me. Like, what is Irsay doing there? I know that, like, I'm kind of all over the place here, and I'm frustrated and emotional because I'm a Colts fan and I'm talking about it, but it's really just been a big talking point in the NFL, Sam, as how the Colts have handled it. I can't remember his name. It's escaping me. The Browns offensive lineman, Joe Thomas, right?
Oh yeah.
Came out on Good Morning America. Good Morning, not America. Good morning football. Yeah. And basically just like obliterated the Colts for how they've handled this situation. Called it like the most egregious thing that has ever happened in the NFL. I don't know if I'd go that far because there's been some pretty bad stuff that has happened, but it's definitely the craziest thing that's happened in the NFL this season. And whether it be the Rooney rule that we want to talk about or just the fact that he doesn't have any head coaching experience. Well, and there's former head coaches on the staff there in Indianapolis who could have been easily named interim. Is it just like a blatant tank job by the Colts and they're just trying to mask it with all these?
Right. What else is happening? I don't even know. Jim Irsay does weird stuff sometimes, and this is the latest.
No, not sometimes, Sam. Like most of the time. Like 90% of the time it's weird stuff.
This is the latest in weird Jim Irsay things. You know, Jeff Saturday's a guy that is super respected by his teammates that played with him. He's a really smart guy. You know, centers are kind of like another coach on the field. They're responsible for a very important, maybe even the most important part of an offense, the offensive line, the centers calling out the blocking assignments and
all the protections and audibles,
all that stuff, right? They know every single play in the book like the back of their hand because
they have to like analyze the defense as well. Like exactly. It's like they know what's happening with their 11, but they also like really know like the front seven at least of the defense.
So having said that, that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be a great. So yeah, you're looking for an interim guy. If Jeff Saturday, maybe Irsay's thinking, okay, Jeff Saturday is never going to, no one's ever going to let me hire him as the head coach at the end of the year. So maybe if I hire him as the interim guy, see what he can do. Then, you know, obviously Irsay really likes Jeff Saturday because you mentioned it. First of all, let's just look at the defensive coordinator, Gus Bradley, right? Yeah. That's the guy that's been in the NFL for 30 plus years. This is a guy who knows the league. He's definitely experienced as a coach in the league. Throw the interim tag on him. He would know what to do. You know how to.
And the Colts defense is actually decent this year. Like the defense is the side of the ball. They're like, oh, it's like they're playing NFL caliber football. It's the offense that's terrible. So it's like, oh, Gus Bradley's responsible for that.
You know who the senior defensive assistant is on the staff?
John Fox.
Why isn't Super John Bowl? Fox the interim head coach? He's been in two Super Bowls with two teams. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's a guy that knows NFL coaching. And look, neither of those guys might be the long-term answer for the Colts either. But if you're looking for a stopgap here to fill the season and to remain competitive and to have some semblance of organization on a weekly basis in practice and in meetings and things like that, those are the guys you want to hire. Am I right? I mean,
sure.
Look, if you really want to make a splash, Reggie Wayne, at least he's been on the staff for a year, right? As a receivers coach. So I don't know. I don't get it. We'll see what happens. I don't hate Jeff Saturday, but I just think
this is not a
crazy move. So
it's not an indictment on Jeff Saturday at all, because if anybody was, I mean, I won't say anybody, but most people getting that call, hey, come in, do you want to be an NFL head coach? Like, you'd be crazy not to take that opportunity, unless you're just like, hey, I mean, even Jeff Saturday was like, why are you calling me? That's what he said to Irsay. But I mean, unless you're just so like, hey, you know what? Like, I'm definitely not qualified for this. And like the Rooney rule or whatever other reasons you want to give, like, unless you're going to do that, like, but most people selfishly would be like, yeah, I want that opportunity. And like, I don't blame Saturday for taking it at all. I don't think that's on him. It's just like Irsay and the chaos that is the Indianapolis Colts right now. And it's an embarrassing thing for that organization. And, I look at you mentioned, you know, bringing him in possibly at the end of the season. I would actually find it more respectable to bring him in as the full-time coach after a season ends and you have a full interview process and, you know, you have the Rooney rule in place. I mean, like, people would still talk about it if you don't hire a minority coach. Like, it would just happen because it should happen because there are not enough minority head coaches in the NFL. And that, like you mentioned Reggie Wayne, it's like Reggie Wayne's on the staff. Like, he's part of that like legacy that Irsay is clearly fascinated with, reaching back, you know, 12, 15 years, and he wants to have those guys be brought back in the building. It's like, he was already in the building. Like, why are you not elevating him? There are so many different levels that I'm just like, okay, this is so far-fetched and off the wall. It just, It frustrates me as an NFL fan, as a Colts fan. I really hope that, you know, Bieniemy gets a call. Brian Johnson, like, I mean, the Colts are clearly done with the retread quarterback thing of Phillip Rivers and Matt Ryan and Carson Wentz and all these, you know, guys that have been on other teams and are kind of at the end of their life there with whatever franchise they've been with. The Colts need to go get a young quarterback, a Jalen Hurts type. I'm not saying that like they're going to get some, right, you know, exact kind of model of that, but they're going to get a young quarterback in the NFL draft this next year. I can't believe that they won't draft one. So bring in a guy like Brian Johnson, who's had success clearly with a young quarterback,
right,
and see what he can do. Like, he's clearly a young star, and that's really what all of these teams in the last 5-10 years have been trying to do, Sam, is hire those young up and coming stars like a Brian Johnson. So I'd love to see that kind of happen for Indianapolis, just for my own selfish reasons. But I also think that it would speak volumes to kind of like rectifying the situation that has been just a crash of a season for the Colts.
Definitely been rough. This is definitely a sign that they've thrown the white towel or waved the white towel, whichever way you want to look at it, on the season.
Hey, it's rough. If they go out,
I'm sorry to Colts fans.
We don't need any pity. It's just we brought this upon ourselves by rooting for that team. I will say though, Sam, the only thing that'll make this situation better is if they get a franchise quarterback out of it in April's draft. All right, Sam, I've talked about the Colts enough on this podcast and the frustrations that they bring me. I want to get, before we end today, and I know I've gone long, I'm a frustrated person right now when it comes to football, so I'm talking a lot. But I want to get your thoughts on the game of the week for you this next week, week 10, while you're thinking about your game. My game of the week is going to be Sunday morning football. We've got the Seahawks and the Bucks. They're going to Munich, Germany. It's the first game in Germany, which is pretty cool. We've had these London games, but get up early on Sunday and get to see a really surprising Seahawks team that's 6-3. Geno Smith's playing. I don't know if he's Jalen Hurts MVP level, right? But like, he's got to be in that conversation of, you mentioned him as a comeback player of the year earlier, but like, I think he's playing really good football. If he can keep the turnovers away, you know, like that's a good football team. And then Tom Brady had that amazing comeback in the fourth quarter. Right. It looked vintage last week, right? Yep. So I'm interested to see if they can replicate that. So that's the reason why I'm excited for that game on Sunday. Sam, what's your eye on for the next week?
Yeah, I like that. I like that there's 7:30 a.m. Mountain Time kickoffs with these European games almost every week. Yeah. That kind of gets your NFL football weekend started early. Side note, but I was talking to someone this last week who mentioned that that was the only game they watched this last week, and they loved it, that it was on at 7 a.m. So anyway, I mean, look, that game between the Vikings and Bills is a hard one to not want to see, because are the Vikings really for real with Kirk Cousins?
They haven't played anybody really.
Right. So does, you know, because sure, the Bills lost to the Jets last week, but the Bills are still a really good football team. So I'm interested to see how the Vikings play in Buffalo against this Bills team, to see just how real or not these Vikings are halfway through the season. That's a game that really stands out to me, I think, on the schedule this week. I wish I could pick another one because I keep looking at it, because to be honest with you, I am not interested in the Vikings at all. But
hey, I will say Sunday Night Football is pretty good. I know we really plug that just because it's on our airwaves, but KSL 5 on Sunday night, 6:20, you've got the Chargers taking on the 49ers. I think that that's a good game just because I really am fascinated with seeing Christian McCaffrey again in the 49ers offense, seeing if he can kind of continue. I mean, he was amazing that last game for them. And so the Chargers have been really weird this year. Really, I mean, since the last game of the season last year, it seems like they've just been like, they haven't found a good rhythm. So I'm interested to see if they can beat a good 49ers team. They're in San Francisco, I guess Santa Clara, that is. But yeah, I think that that'll be a fun game as well.
And so if I pick a second game, look, the Dolphins have been fun to watch this year. And I know they're playing the Browns. Say what you want about the Browns, but Tua and Tyreek Hill just have something going that just feels like it's almost like you want to see them every week. And so that's another team that catches my attention every week. Once I see that game's on, I'm going to tune over and watch them for a bit. You know, has nothing to do with Tyreek being on my fantasy team, but I'm saying
that's funny.
No, that they have been fun to watch this year.
Hey, if he continues on the pace that he's on, I mean, he's going to get 2,000 yards. It's pretty crazy. Yeah. He might end up being the offensive player of the year, which is pretty wild for Miami there. All right, Sam, what do you got to plug for us on KSL Sports Live?
Big weekend here in the state of Utah, the weekend of November 11, 12, and 13, because we've got state championship football happening for high school football. And we always talk about locals in the NFL. This is where a lot of them originate from. They're on the big stage at Rice-Eccles Stadium for the semifinals in 5A and 6A. 1A through 4A are playing their championship games down at Utah Tech in St. George, Utah. And yeah, there are a handful of kids out there that I guarantee you will make that step eventually in their careers to be in the NFL someday. It blows my mind still since I've moved back to Utah, just how great our high school football is in this state and how many of these kids have gone on to succeed at a high level in Division I and then even beyond that. You know, we talked about a couple of them, Zach Wilson, Dax Millen today, and it goes beyond that even. But man, I love seeing the talent that we have. So that's going to be a big part of our weekend, along with our NFL football action and locals in the NFL.
He's Sam Farnsworth. You can find him on Twitter at Samsworth_KSL and on Instagram now, Sam, at Samsworth_TV. So make sure you're following Sam on all of the socials. And you can find me on Twitter at Kyle Ireland. And until next week, be sure to check out all things KSLSports.com and make sure you're downloading the KSL Sports app as well.